This is Reverse Deception Radio on the Veritas Radio Network, Crusade Channel.
The lunatic is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. Every day, the paper boy brings more. And if the dam breaks open many years too soon, and if there is no room on the hill, and if your head explodes with dark foreboding, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon.
If you're behind the moon and hear some weird noise on your radio and you know you're blocked from the Earth, then what could you possibly think? Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think NASA has classified information, I've got a bridge to sell you that connects Brooklyn and Manhattan. And it was built in the 1800s. I'll make you a very good price on it. The crew of one Apollo mission to the moon were so startled when they encountered strange music-like noises coming through their headsets, they didn't know whether or not to report it to NASA. It was 1969, 2 months before Apollo 11's historic first manned landing on the moon, when Apollo 10 entered lunar orbit, which including traversing the far side of the moon, where all spacecraft are out of radio contact with Earth for about an hour, and nobody on Earth can see or hear them. As far as the public knew, everything about the mission went smoothly. The Science Channel series, NASA's Unexplained Files, discusses the overlooked recordings. Overlooked. What a great name. Of an unsettling experience the three astronauts had while flying above the dark side of the moon. The recordings contain strange, otherworldly music coming through the Apollo module's radio, Science Channel says. The conversation between the three astronauts indicated they heard sounds like they had never heard before. Quote, it sounds like, you know, outer space type music. You hear that? That's whistling sound. Well, that sure is weird music. Unquote. The sounds lasted almost an hour, which would be just as long as they were on the dark side of the moon. And just before the astronauts re-engaged radio contact with Earth, they discussed whether or not to tell Mission Control what they had experienced. Quote, it's unbelievable, you know. Shall we tell them about it? I don't know. We ought to think about it. The Apollo 10 crew was very used to the kind of noise that they should be hearing. Logic tells me that if there was something recorded on there, then there was something there. Apollo 15 astronaut Al Warden says on the Science Channel program, NASA would withhold information from the public if they thought it was in the public's best interest. Let me read that again. NASA would withhold information from the public if they thought it was in the public's best interest. You don't hear about anything like that until years after the incident occurs. And then you kind of wonder, because it's such an old memory of those things, that you get concerned about if they were making something up or if there was something really there. Because you never know, Warden told the Huffington Post. Same goes for what we were talking about a few weeks ago with JFK. Same goes for with any type of incident like this. Wait a few years. Then people won't care. Continuing on, quote, if you're behind the moon and hear some weird noise on your radio and you know you're blocked from the Earth, and what could you possibly think, Warden said. NASA issued a statement this week explaining the files have long been available to the public. Really? I think that if I had heard music from the dark side of the moon, other than the intro song, I would have been much more interested years ago. Years ago. Folks, you've been lied to again. Congratulations. Continuing on, and that NASA had an explanation for the sound on the recording. Of course it did. It took them 40 years to figure out what they were going to call it. The space agency says the tapes were never lost. While listed as confidential in 1969, at the height of the space race, Apollo 10 mission transcripts and audio have been publicly available since 1973. Now, let me explain the term publicly available. This is the term that is used when a government agency wants the public to think that the government agency has been totally honest, open, and transparent with them for years. They want you to believe that the information, it's been out there all along. They didn't tell you that it was sitting on some GS-3's desk. A GS-3 is like a private in the Army, okay? And just because they didn't have a bunch of fanfare saying, hey, we got some really cool tapes that show music being played from the dark side of the moon, that's being public available. Publicly available, all it means is it's not locked up. It's not a government secret. It's not something that's protected by either the Privacy Act or by some classified caveat. That's what that means. That doesn't mean that you're ever going to be able to find it. It doesn't mean that you're ever going to be able to listen to it. You're going to have to wait years for some things that are publicly available today because it's buried in so much garbage. And that's the way they want it. This is done intentionally. No, they weren't lost. No, they had to come up with a story, and they put a lot of time and effort into the story to make sure that it really is going to win the public opinion, spin the dial. That's what the game's all about. See if the public believes it. If the public doesn't believe it, come back with something else. If the public doesn't believe that, come back with something else. Eventually, people are just going to get so worn out and bored with it, they're going to be out playing Pokemon Go, or they're going to worry to go start tweeting about hashtag Dead Lives Matter, or they're going to have something else that they're going to be chasing week after week after week. Remember, folks, this is a 7-second hook society. Every 7 seconds, if I don't have your attention with something, you're going to go somewhere else. And that's exactly what this release of information is all about. You know how I know? Because it was released in June. That's how I know. And nobody cares. You bet your darn Aunt Petunia's petticoat that if this was released in 1969, before the Apollo 11 mission happened, there'd be some highfalutin debate going on, and there'd be lots of discussions all over this union. The Russians would be probably psychotically up in arms about this too. So I digress. They've been publicly available since 1973. Since the internet did not exist in the Apollo era, yes it did, NASA has only recently provided digital files for some of those earlier missions. Key on the word of some, the conditional word, some, please. The Apollo 10 audio clips were uploaded in 2012, a week or two after the internet was created. Al Gore check. But the mission's audio recordings have always been available at the National Archives since the early 1970s. So if you happen to be in Hawaii and you're confused or you're concerned about it, you got to go pay yourself, pay to get a ticket to fly out here, to stay in a hotel, to get a card. You know where the National Archives are? There's one building is over by Adelphi, Maryland. Let me tell you how easy it is to get there. It's just inside the Beltway, the 495 loop that goes around Mordor. It should be filled in with water. You should have oil on the top of it burning daily to identify Mordor in the middle. But we don't, sadly. But that's where it's at. It's not too far from one of the locations that I used to work at. And it is definitely not the easiest thing to get to. As a matter of fact, I drove past there. I drove past there. All by myself, I did that for a year and a half before I actually realized the thing was there. That's how publicly available it is. I worked just down the street. I had a really high government security clearance. I can go in lots of stuff, do lots of stuff for the good of mankind, for the good of, you know, whatever. And I can't find the stinking National Archives that's supposed to be right there. Go figure. There's another building downtown D.C. that everybody gets to go see, but there's nothing there. I digress after I digressed. As for the likely source of the sounds questioned in the television program, Apollo 10 Lunar Module pilot Gene Cernan told NASA on Monday, this was back in June, don't forget, quote, "I don't remember that incident exciting me enough to take it seriously. It was probably just radio interference. Had we thought it was something other than that, we would have briefed everyone after the flight. We never gave it another thought." Close quote. Quote, we'd had a lot of incidents where guys who flew in space saw and heard things that they didn't recognize. And you wonder about all that, Warden said. "I have a very open mind about what could have happened. It's someone's hearsay evidence. It's only a visual or audio event, which is hard to pin down. Recollection is one thing, but actual proof is something entirely different." Close quote. NASA has made Apollo 10 transcripts and audio transmissions available to the public for further clarification. So there is something on the dark side of the moon. There's audio out there. Now, this is only addressing Apollo 10's audio. This doesn't address anybody else's audio. You think that's going to be publicly available, folks? You think you're going to be able to see that soon? No, it's probably sitting on that same GS3's desk. I'm going to put the coffee pot on and I'll be right back.
Nothing like a great cup of black coffee.
Crikey, mate. Did you hear that?
Matt heard it real good through the parabolic, and he said it is definitely a Squatch.
It's got to be a Sasquatch on the dark side of the moon. Turning to other riveting stories of deception and intrigue, the coffee beans you may be using to make your coffee could have been picked back during the Bush administration. Congratulations. This from the Wall Street Journal. "If your next cup of coffee doesn't taste so good, it could be because the beans are really, really, really old. Stale coffee may be the sign of beans that are up to 9 years old. Arabica beans, which are considered one of the highest quality coffee beans, are more commonly being stored for years before being consumed. The older beans are starting to crop up more and more in coffee cups because they become cheaper for each year they've been sitting in a warehouse. For instance, coffee that's been certified by the ICE Futures U.S. Exchange that goes unsold for 121 days costs half a cent cheaper per pound," For 3 years, the cost falls 35 cents per pound. Coffee that's 9 years old is a whopping $1.55 less per pound, which makes it pretty much free, since Arabica coffee futures were at $1.37 just this morning. They are some very old coffee that have been sitting around for years that are going out the door, said Edgar Cordero, an advisor for the Colombian Coffee Federation, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. The oldest beans are reportedly going to places like hotels, schools, and vending machines. You're not going to see this in your Starbucks, according to Jorge Cuevas, chief coffee officer at Sustainable Harvest, a coffee importer, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. It's mostly going to be in generic brands that you might get at institutional levels. Well, folks, does that explain a lot? Does that explain why the can of coffee that you used to get in the grocery store used to be 36.5 ounces, was reduced to 34.5 ounces, then to 32.5 ounces? Some of them these days are weighing in at a whopping 28 ounces, and you're paying the same price. Now, think about that in conjunction with the fact that the Arabica beans that are used in some of the higher-end coffees are super old or are being replaced by the Robusto beans. Deception 101. You're getting ripped off again. The coffee industry is out of control, like everything else. The reason you're not seeing terrible inflation, or at least you don't think you're seeing terrible inflation right now, is because your portion sizes are smaller. Remember the fun sizes of your Snickers bar? How fun is it now? Not as much fun as it used to be, is it? Yeah, it's only about 67.23% as fun as it used to be. I know, because I sent a letter to Mars Corporation, the guys who make Snickers bars, see, and I asked them, I said, you know, the fun size Snickers bar that I used to enjoy so much that helped me get this incredible body that can't be reproduced overnight, I want you to know that, is not as much fun as it used to be. Apparently, your Snickers bar has shrunk, or my hips have gotten a lot wider. Now, there might be a correlation, but there is no causation, because my hips have gotten wider, and their Snickers bars have gotten smaller. They came back to me in a letter and said, well, if you want us to maintain the same high quality and standards that we have, then you're going to have to accept the fact that we're going to make these things smaller. Keep in mind that the number of grams of chocolate in a fun-size Snickers bar, even at this size, still contains at least 6 to 12 fragments of insects, according to the FDA Defects Handbook. A full-size Snickers bar is going to get you 13 to 50 fragments of insects. So remember that next time you're sucking down that big old Snickers bar. Think of all the protein you're getting that you didn't count for. I wonder if that's in the list of ingredients and nutrients, things that I need a PhD to read anymore. Now, this was the kind of funny deception type of stuff that's going on these days, but I'm going to get one story in here that is sad, pathetic lying and deception. This is a story of a young 10-year-old named Caleb Schwab. Police have revealed the 10-year-old Caleb Schwab, who was involved in a fatal accident at Schlitterbahn Water Park in Kansas City on Sunday, died of, quote, a neck injury. Caleb was found dead at the bottom of the slide in the pool, and police confirm that he had been decapitated. First paragraph says neck injury. Police say he was decapitated. Now, you can be internally decapitated when the spinal cord is snapped, but that doesn't sound like what happened here in this situation. A witness said that she and her boyfriend were on their way up to the top of the 168-foot water slide for their scheduled 3 p.m. ride when they saw a large group gathering at the bottom. There was a woman being treated for some kind of face and head injury. And that was when my boyfriend said, "I think there's someone else." What her boyfriend pointed out was first responders covering the body of 10-year-old Caleb. Two women in the boat with him, neither related to Caleb, suffered minor facial injuries. It looked like he must have somehow been ejected from his seat, bounced around between the netting and the slide, and just slid down. He would have fallen down without the raft. It's kind of like a tube. Another witness said that his 14-year-old cousin had ridden in the slide earlier that day and had been told that towards the end of the ride, the Velcro on the belt had come undone. Since the incident, the magazine has learned that the scheduled 2014 opening of the water park was delayed multiple times due to glitches, including one issue that caused water rafts to fly off the slide and into the air. Quote, "We had many issues on the engineering side. Jeff Henry, the creator and Schlitterbaum's co-owner, told the magazine, "A lot of our math was based on roller coasters at first, and that didn't translate to water slides like this. No one had ever done anything like this before. You're telling me this kid died because you guys decided to make a water ride work like a roller coaster? That's just pathetic." And here is the most ridiculous statement. This one wins the prize. Quote, "It's dangerous, but it's a safe dangerous now," he added. "Schlitterbahn is a family water park, but this isn't a family ride. It's for thrill seekers of the world, people in extreme adventure." Wow. My kids could have been on that ride. Your kids could have been on that ride. And this guy says it's dangerous, but it's a safe kind of dangerous, you know? It's not as dangerous could be. It's just kind of sort of dangerous, which really isn't like dangerous. So this is how you take responsibility when somebody dies on a ride that you had ill-prepared for public use. Way to step up and be a man. I'm Greg Carpenter. This is Reverse Deception Radio on the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be. When we come back, we're going to get into the sad, depraved story of a government a long time ago in a galaxy far, far... No, actually, it was just not that long ago, and it was right here in the States.
There is no dark side in the moon, really. Matter of fact, it's all dark.
We're giving you 5 minutes to gather the Pentagon-sized pile of scales that's fallen from your eyes. Reverse Deception. We'll be right back on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.